Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Rick here from Fueled by the Outdoors, and I'm here to tell you about an amazing company, Saddy's Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family are second to none in putting high-quality, hand-loaded ammunition in your weapon to put down that big game animal that you have been dreaming of. Aaron Satterfield offers a custom TSS turkey load known as a Saddy's Fatty. I got to tell you, I love the 12-gauge version of it. Chris shoots the 20. If you've listened to the podcast, I know you've heard the story about when he and I were hunting turkeys in Kentucky, and he put one down at a really decent distance. They also make waterfowl loads, custom rifle loads, and they got general gunsmithing services. Contact Saddy's Facebook page for more information. Tell them that Fueled by the Outdoors sent you.
Recurve buck down, baby. Oh my gosh, that was freaking awesome.
This is my first public land buck. This is my second sit of the season.
Oh my gosh, I just heard him fall.
I just shot my Kentucky buck.
Two, one. Welcome to Fueled by the Outdoors. I'm your host, Rick Cates, and well, Josh. Chris isn't here. We should start off by saying that Chris is not here. This is the first time in, I want to say, like 60 episodes.
It's been a while.
That Chris has not been here. I think one of the only other times was I did a podcast with a guy I went to college with over duck hunting, who had never been duck hunting before. I think it was the last time that Chris missed a podcast.
Yeah. At least the group podcast, because you've done some like by yourself.
Oh yeah, and he's done the conservation ones and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is like, you know, we say like we're your hosts, Rick Cates and Chris Lepper, and then it's like, and then there's Josh. But like you're on every one of these now. I feel like you're just like part of the hosting cast. So we're just gonna go with that. We're your hosts, Rick Cates and Josh Luck.
I like it. I've been upgraded. Thank you.
There you go. You're welcome. You're welcome.
I'm no longer a sexually transmitted disease.
Or fungus or anything like that. Oh, goodness. So we've got stuff to talk about with regards to turkey season.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you've been listening to the podcast at all over the past, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months, really. We have really been hammering turkey stuff. We had Shane Simpson on. We had the Southern Outdoorsman on. We've had Pierce on.
Shane Parker
on. Derek Craig was on. You know, list goes on this stuff. But these are the ones that I enjoy talking about the most because we can talk all the tactics we want. And Aaron Satterfield. We had Aaron Satterfield. Shout out to Saddy's LLC. We had him on to talk about TSS, which we'll get into here in a little bit, but we can talk all the tactics we want. We can talk about every which way to get on a bird, but it is so much more fun to talk about when you have dead birds on the ground.
Yeah. Putting those tactics into play and actually being successful.
Absolutely. So if you're wondering what we're talking about, this is actually a two-state, two-bird show. Now that I think about it, because we're going to break down, Josh had some opening day success in Kentucky.
Yep.
And my son, Harrison, killed his first bird in Ohio on youth season, which I was a part of and my dad was a part of, but we'll hop into that here in a second. So I do want to give a disclaimer to anyone listening to this podcast currently. If you are planning us for us to spot burn any place, you can skip ahead a couple minutes and listen, but we're not talking about any of our spots specifically. I just want to be very clear about that. Now, if you were in the state of Kentucky opening weekend with the other, I don't know, 60,000 cars that decided to descend upon the state.
It was an armada. It was just unleashed upon Kentucky public for opening weekend.
So what's funny is when I, growing up, whenever we'd go south to Cumberland, you'd see signs like a McDonald's would have a sign in the, like, you know, they put the letters up there or whatever they do. Mm-hmm. And like every one of these signs would say, "Welcome Ohio Navy." And there were so many people going to Cumberland or Dale Hollow or Taylorsville or wherever in the state, that they were overtaking the locals on the lakes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, they're huge lakes. I mean, massive, massive, massive areas.
Yeah.
The public ground in Kentucky is, I mean, other than Daniel Boone National Forest, that's not a spot burn for anyone who's listening. They're not carrying capacity runs out at points.
Yes.
So, you know, I want to say this before we kind of get into it. We talk a lot about ethics. We talk a lot about etiquette. If and when you're going to be hunting any of the states you're going to and you plan on using public land, private land for that matter, make sure you're using etiquette and ethics. And please, 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 I cannot stress this enough. Lots of guys are using TSS. Lots of guys are shooting longer distances. Please make sure you are seeing through your target and there is not someone past and that you know what you're aiming at. There was a picture online that's been going around of a guy, I think, got shot with some long beard number fives recently, and it looked...
I was bruised.
Oh, my gosh. All up and down his side. All up and down his side. Luckily, he didn't get killed or anything like that, but please be safe in the woods. That's first and foremost. You can't listen to this podcast if you're dead, and we want you to be listeners, and we want you to be alive. So,
yeah.
So do you want me to start, or you want to start?
No. Let's start with Harrisonburg, because we can start with Kentucky youth, right?
Oh, yeah.
You and him hunted Kentucky youth, and then you guys had success in Ohio. So let's start with him.
Yeah. So I'd love to have him on here, but it's past his bedtime, so we're not going to do that. So I'll explain the hunt from a father's perspective. For anybody who's out there listening, and who has went through this joy, and the massive amounts of frustration that come along with it at the same time. So, Kentucky youth season opened the first weekend in April. I think that's right. I think it was first weekend in April. So, Harrison and I went and, you know, you'll see this in a later video that we're going to put out. We went and scouted. He came to me, I want to say about 4 months ago, and said, "Dad, I want to hunt turkeys." I was like, "Well, okay, buddy. Like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, do you know, like, what all goes into this? I want to hunt turkeys." So, it's like, okay, well, we're going to do this. We're going to get set up. We're going to do everything we need to. So, we went out. He got a Stevens 301 single shot 410 factory choke.
Did you tell him it was his after the bird?
So, man. So here's how this. So that plan all got changed, and he now refers to it as my gun. It's his. He goes, "Are you going to shoot a turkey, Dad, with my gun, or are you going to use your gun?" So it was going to be a gift for his birthday that my parents were going to, like, it was going to be a gift to him, so he would have one. And then we were looking at, like, when my youngest son gets older, he would get one too. So then, they were going to, like, we were going to let him shoot it, and then we were going to wrap it and everything like that for his birthday. And then he would figure out, like, oh, the gun I use isn't mom or dad's or whomever's. It's mine. Well, when my parents thought better of it, they're like, well, you know, I might want to use it. You might want to use it. Harrison's going to want to use it. Keaton's going to want to use it. Keaton's my youngest son. It's going to be a gift to the family. So it became a gift to the family before the season started. So Harrison still has claimed it as his own, at least for the time being, because he is the only one that will be at least shoot. He killed the first turkey with it. So it is his gun for now. But we got the Stevens 301. It's very similar. I think Savage makes the gun, so it's the same as a Savage 301. And I immediately began thinking, like, well, how are we going to go about this with him being, you know, not too terribly tall? I don't want him holding the gun. I don't want to hold it. I feel like nothing against anybody out there who does this. I really respect however you want to take your kid hunting, but like, I would have felt like I would have been cheating. Like if I was like, had him on my lap and me holding the gun and he just looked down the sight and pulled the trigger. So I started upon the suggestion of Pierce Moore. I started scouring, certain sites for a Bogpod death grip. I bought two of them. I now own three of them. We'll get into that here in a little bit. I own two now. I bought three. So I buy this and we get it set up, perfect condition. And we are going to start running rounds through it. And I want to get my son just used to shooting rounds through a gun. He is... I don't know any other way to say this. If you got a kid, have them start with a red dot sight on a 410. It made him so much more confident in what he was shooting at. It was not even funny. I mean, Josh, when you grew up, like, how did you learn how to shoot a gun?
I had my very first gun was a Red Ryder BB gun.
Okay.
And we went out back and shot at like pop cans.
So bead sight, or the little, like, little peep sight that you look down and, like, you'd look for the little piece in the middle?
Yep.
So
actually, I think it was a bead sight.
Yeah. So my first gun was a New England Firearms 20 gauge, and it just had the bead sight. Like, that's all that it had. Every gun up until I used a rifle or a rifled slug gun, to shoot a deer, I only use that sight. This is just a simple Tasco red dot sight that came on top of the gun. We had a hell of a time sighting it in. We figured out what was wrong with it. If you're shooting that gun, make sure that the how they have the label put on there is the correct way, because when we were doing it, it was actually going the other way. So someone either screwed up the labeling on it, or it's just how that sight works. Yeah. So like, you were turning left, sight was going right.
Yeah. So I ran into this with my Swamp Fox.
Really?
I even called Aaron about it when I was making sure my gun was sighted in for this season. On the sight is what is correct. It has, like, if you're going left and right, it has like a little arrow and it says right to move right. But if you read the directions, it's actually the opposite of what.
Correct.
I was like, this doesn't make sense. So I called Aaron Satterfield. I was like, hey, I'm like, which one of these is right? Because they're saying the opposite things. He's like, well, I'm pretty sure the directions are right. So I went to cite mine in with the directions in mind and the instructions. And I found out it was wrong. What was on the actual site was correct. So I probably spent, you know, I wasted three extra TSS shells when I didn't need
lucky.
To.
It was you're lucky. So that's when we decided Harrison was popping things left and right. We had him shoot cans. We had him shoot clay birds. We had him shoot a turkey target, had him shoot jugs of water filled with water, like a 2 liter filled with water and a milk jug full of water, just so he got like the idea of like when you shoot something, it's going to hurt it or it's going to be gone. So then we give him, and this is my mistake. We put the TSS in, and these are Saddy's Fatties. These are the little red cigarillo looking ones that you get. And he shoots and it is low and right. And he like, I just hear him. He's like, man, I think I screwed the shot up. I'm like, oh, I think you did okay, bud. You might have just flinched. Well, then I get in there and I do it and it is way right. I'm like, something's not right here. Like this thing was throwing patterns fine just a little bit ago. We ended up going through all the Saddies. Luckily, Aaron, being the great guy that he is, was able to get me some more. We got it figured out after we ran through a whole box of 410 shells, which are very hard to find if you haven't tried looking for them lately. if you find them, they're really good to grab. But we did that and he was ready. We got it sighted in, and the idea is, at least for this year, we use the factory choke. And we're probably going to get an Indian Creek for it next year. Cause I know that what Aaron suggests for the Saddies Fatties. So we go, we're listening for birds. He goes out, he's having a blast. He's hearing birds for the first time. I mean, birds close, like birds that are gobbling like 60 yards away, like in the tree and that kind of stuff. And this is in Kentucky. So we take everything. We were at my buddy Bruce's property. We go ahead and we get everything set up. So we go, we get, blind set up, chair set up, get the bog pod set up, everything. And this is a week before the season. So, I'm looking at the weather, everything looks perfect. And like I just lay everything down to the blind. I'm like, we're just going to come in, we're going to set everything out, and then we're going to be good to go. So, during this time, Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, I believe parts of Tennessee get put under a high wind advisory. So when they say high wind advisory, what they meant was 40 to 50 mile an hour winds with up to 60 mile an hour gusts. So we get there on opening morning knowing, and I knew darn good and well, I told Harrison before we got there, I'm like, listen, dude, when we walk up here, the blind might not be here. And when you tell us like a 6 going on 7 year old that, they kind of like, what do you mean? It's like, just like the wind might have taken the blind. Like, let's just not worry about it. So we get up there. Chairs are there, but the blind is gone. Chairs are there. Decoys are magically still sitting on top of the chairs. The decoys were just sitting there. And I'm sitting there looking like, how is this even possible? But the bog pod is gone. So, I mean, if you've ever shot off one of these things, they're 8 pounds. So, like I go and at this point, Harrison's getting like upset. He's like, well, where's the bog pod? Like, I can't hold the gun. I was like, it's going to be fine. Like, it couldn't have gone that far. It didn't. But the problem with it is now is that it has a horrifically bent leg, because me, being the idiot that I am, left it in the upright position because I thought, hey, if I leave it like this, I'll just walk in, put the gun on it. We know it's the right height. So I get the blind set back up. I get the decoy set up. I go in, I get the bog pod set up. And we get everything set up. It's the leg is serviceable. I get it leveled the best I can. He stands up behind it. We're good to go. I make sure that you can see the red dot. So it gets to be first light, and birds just start hammering on the roost, just all over the place. And we're listening. He's drinking hot chocolate. I'm drinking coffee. We're having a great time. So it gets to be 7:30. Wind starts picking up a little bit. It gets to be 8. 8:30. It's getting like kind of windier. And I look at him, I'm like, hey bud, like, you doing okay? And he's starting to get, I think, a little bit cold. And I was like, he goes, yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm like, you cold? He goes, yeah. So I'm like, all right, what time you want to give it to? He goes, I want to give it till 9 o'clock. I'm like, okay. We give it till 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock rolls around. I'm like, okay, it's nine. I'm going to get out, take a leak. And you just sit in here. I take the shell out of the gun. And he goes, well, what if I see a bird? I'm like, just make a bird noise at me or something. He goes, well, what kind of bird noise? I'm like, I don't know. Just make a noise. So I literally step out of the blind, go to the bathroom. I've got my mouth call in. And we had heard a bird maybe like 20, 30 minutes earlier, maybe 140 yards away. I'm like, I'm going to rip a call real quick. I rip a call and a bird explodes 40 yards from us in this bottom. I run inside the blind, get set up, throw the shell back in the gun. And I'm like, did you hear that? He goes, yeah. I was like, that bird is very close. I'm like, get up and get ready. I call one more time. The bird is at 20 yards at this point. It is 20 yards to our right. I'm like, get ready. This bird is going to come out. Well, for any of you who've not had this happen, and this is the first time I've had this happen, I'm sure like guys have probably had it happen quite a bit often. This was the boss Tom of the farm. It came in all puffed up and went straight to the Jake decoy and started trying like knew something like was wrong with it, like got up in its face and stuff. And Harrison had practiced just on sitting still targets. And this bird is very big. For any of you that looked at the video, you saw how big the bird was. It was what I would call, like, I think anyone else would be, I think Chris called it, like, it's a bird that would ruin you if it was your first bird. It was a big Tom. So Harrison gets set up. I'm overexcited. He's overexcited. He pulls the trigger. The bird's head had came back in to its body. It jumped up in the air and it ran off. I got out of the blind to make sure. Bird got missed completely. It ran off. And all you hear is, oh man. But we're packing up everything and we're getting everything ready to go. And he looks at me, he goes, I know that I'm not going to get a bird every time I go out, Dad, and that's okay. And I was like, oh, thank God. It takes, like, as I think as a parent, like, that's such a relief when you hear that, because there's guys that you hunt with 30 and 40 years who still don't understand that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you, for spouses out there listening, I'm sure that there are some people listening whose spouses are like, well, you didn't see anything. It wasn't worth it. It's like, you didn't get anything. It's not worth it. It's like, that's not true. Like there's a lot to be learned. We learned a lot that day. So we went out the next day. The blind was gone again. The chairs were gone this time. And it was freezing cold. We made it maybe another, I don't know. We made it to 9 o'clock again. And we packed everything up and headed in. He had kind of had it. So, we knew, like if he got another opportunity in Kentucky, it would be okay. But if not, no big deal. We had Ohio. So fast forward, to Ohio youth season. My dad has a place that, he got permission for, Harrison to hunt on. So we went there and he had set up a blind already. We get in there. Harrison was a trooper, walked probably, you know, a good 3/4 of a mile back to the blind. We get set up, get everything squared away. And it butts up near a place that people can hunt, like, regularly. Like, we know people go in there and hunt. So morning comes, daylight comes, and I'm texting back and forth with you guys, and you guys are hearing birds, and I am not hearing a flipping thing. Not a thing. I'm like, this, and like, if you were in Kentucky on opening day, it was the same weather as Ohio. Bluebird skies, dry as a bone. Oh my gosh. Very little wind. Like, you could not have asked for a better morning. Not hearing a bird. So we're sitting there, we're all kind of talking, calling. And then I make a call. I rip kind of a loud call, and I hear a hen way far off. And I was telling my dad, I'm like, I think I just heard a hen. So he had a slate call, I had a mouth call. So he starts hitting the slate call, and he's like, yeah, that's a hen. I hear it. So we hear a little bit more. And then we hear the bird coming in towards us. So I get Harrison, and I like put him on my lap. I'm like, okay, because with this setup, he had to be on my lap in order to see through the blind, but he still had control of the gun. Like, I wasn't touching the gun. So he gets on my lap and immediately falls asleep. And I'm just like, I'm like, this can't be happening right now. Like, there's a bird 40 yards from us. So I'm like squeezing him. I'm like, Harrison, like, wake up. There's a bird. Like, and like, you know, like you'll know this when your kid, well, your kid probably doesn't now. Like that half-ass, like their eyes open and they're kind of awake, but then they go back to sleep. Look, mm-hmm. Like, that's what he did. And finally he heard the hen like yelp and his like eyes shot open. Like someone screamed in the dark, and I'm like, don't move. There's a bird to our left. And like, I don't see a gobbler, but I see a hen. So he sits there and he watches this hen walk through. Well, at that time, another hen starts making noises behind us and just starts like making the noises that hens make when there's something wrong. And like, they know something's wrong. And like, they're seeing the decoys. They know they're not real birds, but they know something's wrong. This other hen just kind of walks around, walks through, and walks about. And we hear a gobble. I'm like, okay. Well, so there's birds here, and this is maybe 150 yards out, and not hearing them. And then I rip a call, dad rips a call. And when he ripped the slate call, they were closer, maybe like 60 yards. And it wasn't one bird. It was like four birds. Mm. So we're watching, and like the way this is set up is like direct. We're like, the blind is like, if the front is like right here, for those you all can't see it, but like the gun is set like in the corner of the blind facing out like against the corner. So like the front of the blind is facing an indented tree line. So like on the indented tree line, there's like a block of woods, and then there's a field to the right of it. In the field to the right of it is nothing but green, beautiful green, like emerald green grass. And all of a sudden, you just see redhead. And like, there's four birds in half strut, one of which is a very large gobbler. Not as big as the one that Harrison shot and missed at in Kentucky, but extremely big. But there's four Jakes there too. And they're all in half strut, like walking around or whatever. And they're gobbling. You call, they'll gobble. We just wait. And we wait. Well, then they just stop for a second. We see them walk by. Like there's like a, like these birds are maybe 40 yards in front of us right now. They're in the field. I didn't feel comfortable telling them to take a shot at that distance. I just didn't. And I believe, like that there was someone else hunting that field. I didn't want them shooting over in that direction. So when we started, my dad had said, all the birds are going to come in from the left. He goes, I've only had one other time where birds come in from the right. Well, these three Jakes at this point are gobbling their heads off, and I see them first. So like the orientation is like Harrison's on my lap. He's looking, and he's like got like a somewhat of a wall here, so he can't see through it. I can see, like, it's one of those see-through blinds.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see the entire front area in front of us, and I see these three birds, and like two of the birds know something's up, like something ain't right. Like, and there's this one Jake that keeps like, that comes in, is like looking at the Jake decoy, looking at the hen, and dad's just hitting the slate call real quiet. So I get Harrison's set up on the gun. The gun is cocked. And we're waiting, and this bird comes in and out of view, and I'm like, can you see it? And he goes, no. So I have to like grab the bog pot a little bit. I'm like, can you see it now? He goes, yeah. So the bird comes in and out of his sight four times. These birds were here for 5 minutes at least. Yeah, a long, long time.
Wow.
And like, he's not shooting. So I'm sitting there and I'm just like, he's got to take a shot here. I'm like, hey, bud, like, can you see the birds? And he goes, yeah, I'm going to wait for it to be still. I'm like, great. So if you've ever been turkey hunting, you know that turkeys don't stand still that much. Well, the Jake came back in and we told Harrison, because of the way this gun was shooting, like, aim for the eye. So we couldn't figure out like why he wasn't shooting it, because it was facing us head on. He was waiting for that bird to turn its head. So the eye, as soon as that bird turned its head, he pulled the trigger and that thing dropped so freaking quick. Like, just like sack of taters, just like bag of rocks, whatever. And we all started screaming so loud. We shot gobbled the other two birds that were still there. Like, we shot gobbled these. And like, I'm worried because I know when I've shot birds before, sometimes they don't like to stay in one spot. There is not a better ringing endorsement than this for Saddy's TSS, the Saddy's Fatty. When you shoot something, it kills them dead. The bird doesn't move. They fall to the ground. Like, we had enough time for me to get out of the blind, Harrison to get out of the blind, my dad to come out of the blind before the bird even thought about flopping. And then when he flopped, like, Harrison's like, do I have to hit it with a stick? I'm like, no, we'll step on its neck. It'll be fine. but it was such a cool moment as a dad and like getting like my son killing a bird. Like, it was so cool. And there's so many layers to it because, you know, my dad was there. He taught me how to turkey hunt. And I've explained this to Harrison. My dad has explained this to Harrison. It took us both years. I mean, my dad hunted birds in the 70s, so it took a while to find a bird and kill one. It took me, I want to say, missing three or four birds before I killed my first bird. And I didn't put a good shot on my first bird. He shot that bird and it dropped so quick. And it was like so cool to like for him to, you know, have that experience. And he was so happy he killed the bird. And he was, you know, it was like one of the greatest moments I've ever had as a parent, maybe ever had, like, throughout the course of my life. It made me so happy to be able to share that moment with him. And the fact that like Aaron, like, loaded those shells. He's a good friend. He's done a lot for us. You know, a lot for me personally with gun work and just being a really knowledgeable individual and always being willing to help. Like, I could not appreciate that moment more than right then and there. And it was so much fun and it was so cool. To which Harrison said, like, well, can I go back and hunt turkeys in Kentucky? And we had to have the hard conversation of like, well, daddy needs to kill a bird now. So when I was like, when I get to go out and hunt, like, I'll go. Cause all the other family members, like, everyone is so excited that he killed this. Like, well, you get to go out with your dad again. I'm like, that's not how this works right now. It's like we spent every bit of time scouting and making sure Harrison got a bird first. That was the ultimate goal. And I think I told you guys that, like, yeah. Even if I don't get a bird, like, that was a number one goal every season moving forward, is making sure he gets at least one bird. And he got his bird. Now it's time for me to kill my bird. So, I'm smiling thinking about it, because it was such a beautiful day. It was such a cool experience. The only thing that would have made it better is that if I had gotten to hunt the property that Chris hates me for being able to have hunted in my life, the private game reserve, as he calls it.
Man, that's such a cool experience. I cannot wait until my little one gets to that point. That's like, one of the things I'm looking forward to the most in life is an experience like that with my firstborn.
Man, it's really cool. And I know my youngest, like when we brought the turkey back, cause he was over at my mom and my dad's, he was asking like, well, when do I get to go? I was like, well, you're four. And not I know 4 year olds who killed him. Court, Chris's daughter is one of them.
Yeah.
Yep. She killed a bird at age four. I want to make sure that, he can sit still long enough. He's a little bit more, high energy, I think, is what his teacher calls it.
It's all right. He's four.
Yeah, he's four. Well, exactly.
Rick here from Fueled by the Outdoors, and I'm here to tell you about an amazing company, Saddy's Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family are second to none in putting high-quality, hand-loaded ammunition in your weapon to put down that big game animal that you have been dreaming of. Aaron Satterfield offers a custom TSS turkey load known as the Saddy's Fatty. Man, I gotta tell you, I love the 12-gauge version of it. Chris shoots the 20. If you've listened to the podcast, I know you've heard the story about when he and I were hunting turkeys in Kentucky and he put one down at a really decent distance. They also make waterfowl loads, custom rifle loads, and they got general gunsmithing services. Contact Saddy's Facebook page for more information. Tell them that Fueled by the Outdoors sent you. So enough about my kid and me praising my son and everything like that, being a proud father. I want to hear about Kentucky opening day, all the nitty gritty, every dirty detail of this hunt. Don't spare any details. I want everything that happened.
Okay. I don't think my story is as cool as Harrison's, but I'll give it a go.
Whatever. Go ahead.
So Chris and I both went out opening weekend of Kentucky. So before we went out, we had been scouting for birds. And I think the scouting is important to hit on because I think that is what ultimately led to success that opening day.
I would agree.
We had scouted multiple places. We had actually met up with some of the Latitude crew later in the weekend. And we had scouted that place out first. And then we actually found some areas with a couple birds. That weekend we went scouting. And then the weekend before the opener, we went to this other place where Chris had hunted once before. He had got a bird there 2 years ago. Him and I went there once last year. We went the last day of season. I hadn't got a bird yet, and we covered like 10 miles of this place. We ended up spooking birds off the roost, and that was our own dumb mistake. And we spent the rest of the day trying to find more. So we had some prior knowledge of this spot. Mm-hmm. So when we went scouting, we went to this area. Same place we had spooked those birds off the roost, because Chris was like, well, 2 years ago, we also heard birds here. I'm like, well, seems to be, you know, a historical roosting site. So let's go there. We went there early one morning. We got up. I can't remember. What time did I get up? I got up at like 2 something to go scout this place so we could get there before daylight and set up. We had sent a video into the group to you guys because we got set up there and we heard some of the best gobbling we've ever heard.
Yeah.
I think we heard at least 8 different birds in this spot and a little bit further out. So we had them pegged. So we kind of waited there until it got daylight. We heard them fly down and then we were on this ridge. I'll kind of paint the picture here, but we were on a ridge and then these birds were kind of just over the top of the ridge and there was a bench on the other side of it. So they were roosted kind of above the bench. So we heard them fly down and then we were on the top of the ridge and like this opening where we thought they'll either fly out to this opening and we'll get to see if there's toms here or they're going to fly down the bench. Well, they end up flying down on the bench. We heard some fly down cackles from the hens and stuff and we heard them kind of working off. So we were trying to get an eye on them to see where they were going. And eventually we heard him kind of work off down towards below the bench towards the bottom. And we kind of went up and around and then snuck over the top edge of the ridge. And we were looking down on this bench system and seeing if there was any other birds there. And we ended up seeing a tom strutting. He like had his struts in. We like peek over and he was there. So we watched this bird for like an hour and just figured out what he was doing. He ended up working this bench. And from like a survival standpoint, I know people say that turkeys have these pea-sized brains, but man, their will to survive makes them seem pretty dang smart at times.
Exactly. Exactly.
So this bench system they were on. So essentially there was a ridge. So the public was part of this ridge. It went on the far side of it and went, I guess, yeah, on the far side of it. It went down to this bottom and then down into the bottom were private fields, like private ag fields that these birds could pitch down into.
Okay.
So essentially what these birds were doing, they were on this bench and then they would get up and roost above the bench. So they could either one, fly out into those open fields on public, or two, if there was pressure on the public, they could fly down on the bench. The bench is still part of the public, but you can't see it from the fields. And if someone was to come over the top and the birds spook them, all they have to do is jump over, because right on the other side of the bench is a steep drop off.
Okay. So
all you have to do is pitch off the bench and they can fly right down in the bottoms in these private land fields. It's actually a really good vantage point for it. So that's kind of like what these birds ended up doing. We saw that one tom strutting and he actually went down over the bench towards those private fields. We're like, okay. So we kind of got an idea of what the birds are doing there. So we looked for similar terrain along this ridge system. And they're probably 400 or 500 yards down. We saw another spot on our map. And we're like, oh, let's go over there and check that out. So we head over there. And then Chris, he's got eagle eyes when it comes to turkeys.
Yeah, he does.
Spotted a dark spot like 100 yards away from us. And it's not like wide open. He was like, stop, I think there's a tom there. And sure enough, it was a tom strutting. Same thing on this bench system, over the top of the ridge where you can't really be seen from the public fields. And there was a tom strutting there. So we got beads on two different birds there. We knew kind of where they were roosting. So we felt like that was our highest odds place to go opening day. Mm-hmm. So that was our game plan. And we kind of planned, so just from hunting Kentucky years prior, we knew there was going to be pressure opening day. I think Pierce has hunted that place before opening day, and he, not that specific spot, but around there. And he said it was a couple of years ago. He said it was just trucks everywhere.
It's ridiculous. That place gets hit so incredibly hard mm-hmm. on opening weekend. And again, like it's a decent sized WMA. But man, like the amount of human pressure that you add there, it's a wonder there's any wildlife that's willing to like make a noise there on that weekend. Yeah.
So we knew there'd be some pressure, which was kind of nice where we found those birds. We're like, oh, if we get set up close to the roost, we're going to get in there early, get set up close to the roost. If they stay on these bench systems, we should be kind of away from the people and essentially in a strategic position where we should essentially get first crack at these birds. We got to be, you know, we were planning on setting up within 60 yards of the roost, like super close. So anyway, so that was our game plan. And we got, you know, everything ready the night before. We had our cars packed up and we went to this place. We actually went the night before to try and roost. And we got there at a decent time. I think it was 7:30. Mm-hmm. So we had like an hour of daylight. And there were three other vehicles already in this lot.
Oh, geez.
I was like, what in the world? And none of them were from Kentucky. They were from Indiana. And I was like, what is going on here? So we start walking to where we figured we're going to roost these birds. There's two younger guys that come running down this hill. they were running off to, and they were getting in the vehicle and going to another spot to see if they could roost other birds. Well, they just come running towards us. We're like, something chasing you, joking around. They're like, we're off to another spot. So those guys ended up going. Chris and I get to our spot where we had those birds gobbling on the roost. We're listening there. We don't hear anything that evening. We end up, there was a guy behind us. We started moving off to where we saw that second tom strutting, and then I heard like whistles like 100 yards behind us. And the way the sun was setting in the tree line, I couldn't see anyone. I'm like, Chris, I think I heard a whistle. And he's like, I don't hear anything. I was like, no, I think I heard it again. I'm like, that's a whistle. He's like, no. So those are the peepers, whatever they're called.
Spring peepers, yeah.
Spring peepers. Well, the guy eventually lets out a crow call. And then Chris hears that. I'm like, I told you there was a guy up there. Well, from my angle, he was hidden by a tree and I couldn't see him.
Okay.
It's like, I don't know why he's trying to get our attention. It's not like it's in season or something. So anyway, so we go about our business. We didn't hear any birds. We end up working way around that guy back to the lot. And we're there kind of BSing. And then this guy eventually comes. It's, you know, dark at this point. And he was another guy from Indiana. He had actually been there since like 3 p.m.
Oh, geez.
I was like, holy cow. But he said he was trying to get our attention because we were going down in like this little valley and we didn't see it, but there was a hen and like a jake down there.
Okay.
But we couldn't see from our angle, and he was trying to get our attention for us not to spook it. We didn't hear anything fly off. I mean, they could have just darted off in the mm-hmm. brush, but that's why he was trying to get our attention. So anyway, so Chris and I stayed close to the WMA that night, and because we knew there were vehicles there that early. We're like, no one's going to beat us here.
Mm-hmm.
We're still the champions at that. We got there early, and we go to our spots. So Chris picked the first spot, that first part of the ridge system where we heard the birds gobbling, saw the first tom strutting. So Chris set up there. Oh, I'm going to back up a little bit because that guy that we ran into later, he was hunting that same general area. So he had kind of asked us where we were setting up, and we're like, oh, we had planned on setting here. And he's like, and the guy said he had planned on setting up near where Chris was. Well, Chris was like, well, I'm going to be over the ridge near this bench. He's like, Chris figured he'd be further up behind him,
mm-hmm.
like over the ridge, and it'd be fine. So Chris was like, oh, okay, like we should be fine. Like we're not going to be shooting towards each other.
Right.
So anyway, so Chris goes to that spot. He sets up kind of over the ridge overlooking this bench. And then I trek off 400 or 500 yards down this ridge system onto that other bench. Chris got set up before me, but I got it on video. I was making a joke. I was trying to Jake Bush the turkeys. It took me like an hour to get to this spot. I was sneaking in because I knew I had to, where I was walking, we didn't see the birds roost here, but Chris and I talked like, well, these are the most likely trees that they're going to roost in.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to walk right past it. So I had a dim red light, but I cupped it. So I was
going to ask how you got in there. Were you using lights or were you using dim red lights or what were you guys were using?
So I used a dim red light and then I cupped it. So that mm-hmm. way the light wasn't. So if I'm walking down the bench so I was on the bench, and then to the right was that steep drop off. And then a lot of those root trees are near that edge. So I had it cupped to where the light wasn't shining that direction. It was only shining me and like at the hill or at the ground and at the hill. So it took me forever. I sweat my ass off because it was warm. And I was trying to be sneaky. And so I get set up, and we were there for set up, I don't know, maybe like an hour before legal light. So we were just chilling out. And daylight's starting to break. So from my vantage point, I was saying those fields are in the bottom. I can see those bottoms from where I'm at. So I'm set up kind of up on the ridge. I'm overlooking the bench. The bench is like directly in front of me. It's probably 25, 30 yards in front of me, and I have a couple openings I can shoot this bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Where we start tom strutting. But I can see over the ledge and down on those bottoms where the private is, and then there's part of the public that butts up against it. So I'm seeing like these cars all morning go past the road where the public is. I'm seeing some stop off. I'm like, man, there's a lot of people. And then like it starts getting daylight. And I can we start hearing birds. I'm like, oh my God, we're in the money. I can hear at first hear birds kind of off the direction of where Chris was, and mm-hmm. then within 100 yards, the bird might have been 80 yards from me. A gobbler just sounded off.
Oh and man.
I could tell it was a big bird because it had that real like deep like vibration at the yep. end. I'm like, oh shit, I'm in the money. So we're sitting there and I hear three or four off. So if I'm looking at this bench, there's kind of three or four gobblers off to my right. One is definitely a tom. The closest one was definitely a tom. Down and directly in front of me, over the bench, there's a couple hens that I hear in the trees. And then to my left on down the bench, there were what sounded like jakes. It sounded like there was two of them. So there's a lot of birds around there. So I'm sitting there listening to them, you know, do their thing in the trees. And then I hear a gunshot go off somewhere off behind me. I heard a gunshot. I'm like, well, shit, people are already starting to shoot. The hens in front of me ended up pitching off down in those bottom private fields. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, they're going to all go away. The two hens pitched off in the private fields, and then that, I'm pretty sure it was that big tom pitched off because I saw a third one. And then after that, I didn't hear that big tom gobble, and I could hear others around me. And then I eventually heard one in the bottom. I was like, ah, that's that big one. But anyway, so they pitched off, and then there was one or two other, there was one hen that definitely pitched on to the bench, like 60 yards down to my right. It's pretty thick where I'm at, so it's kind of hard to see, but I saw her pitch down over there. And then there was another one off in front of me, down below me, that kind of just pitched down, was just right on the other side of that bench. You know, so I'm sitting there, and then it starts sounding like a war zone on the public. I think I heard a 5 or 6 shots. I heard a shot down on that private. And then I heard 3 or 4 up behind me. Like I said, I'm over this ridge, so all these open fields on the public are up behind me. I'm like, holy cow, like there's a ton of gunshots going off. But I knew where I was. I'm like, well, if birds are going to try to escape, they're going to go to this bin system, so I'm going to sit down. And we were only 30 minutes in to legal light, so pretty dang early. And I heard like 5 or 6 shots.
Jeez.
I eventually did hear Chris shoot. So I was sitting there and we all got a message in a group that Chris said he had missed a bird.
Yeah.
Well, what had happened was he was just over the ridge overlooking the bench, kind of like I was set up. And he had birds all around him over there as well. Well, it starts getting light and someone's up behind him starting to call. Well, so the birds pitched down on the bench in front of him. And they were too far from where he was at. Well, that guy that he ran into was a lot closer than Chris thought he would be. He was like 30 or 40 yards behind Chris.
He's like 30 or 40. Did you say 30 or 40 yards?
Yeah, he couldn't have been far. But the guy can't see Chris because Chris is like over the edge. But these birds pitched down and the guy, Chris was like, he's like, this guy just starts going off. Meow, meow, meow. And he was like, oh my God, he's going to scare the birds. And Chris couldn't believe it. He said those toms were in strut on the bench. And then they just folded up and started taking off towards the guy calling. And he said, he was like, this was not a good caller. He's like, I was bewildered. So they start heading to this guy. And Chris is like, oh my God, like they're going to walk past me and go to this guy. So one of the toms ends up working towards Chris. He was only like somewhere between 30 and 40 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But he was to the left of Chris, about even with Chris, and there was some thicker cover. Chris had a spot that he thought was open, took a shot. The bird flew off literally in front of him. So it took off, pitched off the ridge, and got on a limb like 10 yards in front of him, like almost eye level.
Oh, jeez. Just staring at him, taunting him.
Yes.
You know, oh, man.
The bird spit in my face. He just stood there. But he couldn't believe he missed. I'm still not sure what happened, and he's not sure what happened. But anyway, so Chris missed. The guy behind him didn't get a shot, clearly, because all the other birds took off. But he texted our group and said he missed. So I'm sitting there. I think after that I heard maybe another shot. There were so many shots that morning, I couldn't believe it. But I'm sitting there, and I had decocked my gun. So I had cocked my gun as soon as I heard those birds going off that morning. And I didn't hear anything for a little while. And after all these gunshots, I just decocked it, and I was sitting there. And it might have been 10 minutes after Chris said he shot and missed. And I look off to my right, kind of where that hen flew down, and I just see, like, heads pop up, like 60 yards down. They're on almost the same level on this hillside as me, but they're kind of working towards the bench. And all I could see was the heads pop up. As soon as I saw the heads, I wasn't sure what they were. I went ahead and, you know, threw back the hammer. I'm like, you know, just in case, I'm going to be ready.
Yep.
Sure enough, it pops over, and then it's a tom. And what these birds were doing, they were just sneaking away from the pressure like I thought they would on this bench. So I'm like, oh boy, like, here he comes. Like, the first one pops over, it's a tom, and then another one falls behind it, and it's also a tom.
Nice.
I was like, oh yeah, like, it's happening. And I don't, like, if a deer, like, for a big deer, like, I'll have buck fever, and I get jacked. And I never got jacked for turkeys until, like, last year when I killed the one at my father's. And this year, with those birds popped up, like, I was like, oh God, like, Josh, hold the gun still. Like my heart was beating. I was like, come on, just keep it together till these birds get here, make a good shot. And the way they were working, so they were kind of, if I'm staring directly in front of me, they were kind of catty center to my right. And I had an opening on the bench. It was like 40 yards. And they were angled right towards that opening. I'm like, okay, perfect. Like, all I got to do is work the bench, like, come down, hit the bench, and then work left a little bit. And that's what it looked like the bird was going to do. So I'm ready. I got my sight, got the red dot in the opening. I'm like, just step here and you're dead. Well, this little shit hits the bench, is getting ready to come in my opening. And instead of going directly down the bench, he crests the edge of the bench and starts going down that steep drop off.
Of course, like, he does.
Yep. He crests it and goes behind, like, this bush. I don't know if it was like a sticker bush, but I couldn't believe it. Like, literally crests it right before he's in my opening and goes over the edge. And I was like, I had my face mask up, but if it was down, like, on camera, like, my jaw was probably open. I couldn't believe it. I was like, are you shitting me? And I was like in panic mode at that time. I was like, oh my God, like, pop your head back up. I made like a couple soft calls, and then that second bird, like, froze. And I was like, shut the hell up, Josh. Like, don't make any more calls. And I was like, man, that second bird's going to do the same thing. So in my head, I'm like, don't give it a chance. Like, as soon as that head hits an opening, shoot. And that's what I did. That bird came, was following the same path. He stopped for a brief second in opening, and I let him have it. And I know we've been throwing saddies out, but they definitely saved me after I reviewed the footage. I shoot this bird, and I see him go down. I see, like, a wing flop over. And like I said, there's a steep drop-off right over this bench.
Yeah.
So I hop my ass up after I see him hit the ground, and I started taking off down the hill. And I was like, oh God, please don't roll all the way down the hill. So I get over there, and he's flopping a little bit, and I step on his neck and got the bird. I was like,
thank God, man.
Thank God. Like, I was jacked. But I went back and watched the footage, and I ranged it. The bird was like 43 yards. And it's not in the wide open. There's some cover there. But I slowed the video down, and I caught him with, like, the bottom right of the pattern.
Okay.
You can see the pattern hit this bush, and I catch his head on, like, the bottom right.
Okay.
Pattern. I was like, I got lucky there. I think I got just jacked in the moment and pulled the shot a little bit, and he was getting ready to hop over that ledge.
Man, I think that's what happens to a lot of people when they say, like, they miss a turkey. It is like, you're just, you don't expect to be as jacked up as you possibly can over a bird Like everyone thinks like, oh, it only happens with bucks. Like when a turkey is like gobbling its head off and it's like 20 to 40 yards in front of you and you can see its head change of color and like you're that close to a piece of wildlife and they don't know you're there. It's like your heart feels like I have like this irrational thought of like the turkey can hear my heartbeat. Like it can hear, cause I can hear it in my ears.
Yeah. I was trying to calm myself down cause it was beating fast. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like get a hold of yourself. It was awesome. I was pretty jacked. So the bird, Chris and I looked at it and he had a pretty good beard on him. It was a 10 inch beard.
Nice.
So that was my first public land bird.
Congratulations, man. That's a big deal.
Thank you. Yeah. I was amped because I'm like, there's like 10 other people here shooting around me and I get a pretty good bird down on the ground. But he had 10 inch beard and then I didn't measure the spurs, like 7/8 of an inch, not like big spurs. So we thought it was like a 2-year-old. Pretty good beard on him. But yeah, we were jacked. Got home that Sunday. So we met up with some of the guys from Latitude and also got trampled by pressure where we were at. But we had a good night in camp with them. We got to BS with them. They're awesome dudes. And so we got home Sunday, cooked the legs, made some turkey leg barbecue. Nice. Your guys' recommendation. So that was good. Everyone was impressed at work. Like, what do you really? Got? I'm like, wild turkey. You're like, really? And I was like, yeah, I killed it on Saturday. No. Like, yeah.
That's awesome, man. Like, yeah, that's one of the coolest parts is like being able to be like, yeah, I did this. In the really, what'd you do? I mean, you get to tell the story to a bunch of people who like don't necessarily understand it all, but they're like in amazement that you went out and you did it and that you were able to go out and do it.
Yeah. I always forget because the vast majority of my friends are hunters. And then when I talk to people that aren't hunters, they're like, they don't understand. And I just forget in my head. I'm like, oh, I guess you wouldn't understand. Like, let me explain.
let me tell you the tale.
Yeah. So Chris and I almost doubled up in the first 40 minutes of Kentucky season.
Man, that'd have been sweet. And I feel bad for Chris, but like I told him, I feel like it's fate because he did this exact same thing last year, if I'm not mistaken. No, he didn't shoot on opening day. Bruce shot on opening day. That was the buzzer beater shot. Mm-hmm. We were all chasing that damn bird around that farm. But he and I hunted. I want to say it was the third weekend of the season last year and second or third weekend. I can't remember which one it was. It was the third weekend because I was supposed to hunt with somebody that weekend, but me and Chris hunted instead. And he shot and missed at a bird at 30 yards that weekend too. And the only thing that we can figure out in those moments was he either like moved the gun or his shoulder and like the bird moves at the same time or something like that, because the bird that he shot at didn't get hit when we hunted this one. And then that was when he took the freaking wind out of my sails when that bird was right above me and he smacked it at, you know, 60, 70 plus or 65. No, what was it? 70 yards.
Yeah.
With a 20 gauge.
Yep. I call him the Bob Lee Swagger of turkey hunting.
But we're you know, I'm excited. Like I'm excited. Like turkey season's here, and this is also a great time to get out. And if you're not already doing it, it's twofold, threefold really. You're out turkey hunting. You can scout deer spots that you might want to hit in the fall. Sign is still like, it's not completely overgrown yet. I mean, by the time this airs, it might be, but, and foraging, like this is the best time of year to like morels, ramps, all kinds of wild foods out in the woods too. So keep your you know, eye on the lookout for that kind of stuff too, because you find a nice patch of morels, it goes really well with the turkey that you, that you're going to shoot this year too.
Yeah. Lots of morel people out there. We didn't run into any foragers. Kentucky opener, man, like we were saying earlier, Kentucky gets pressure, but there was a lot of pressure this year. Like more, like everyone I've talked to.
Yeah.
Like said, it's more than they've ever seen. And I think it was a combination, like Tennessee, like we've talked about, Tennessee moved their opener. Mm-hmm. And then Kentucky's opener, like sometimes it falls on Easter weekend, right?
It does.
Yeah. So it did not fall on Easter weekend this year. So there was, we didn't run into a single in-state person all weekend.
See, and that's the part that like when you think it through, there's a couple things that come to mind. Is one, when it is on Easter weekend, you have far less people from out of state, I think, coming just because it's Easter weekend. You want to spend it with your family, and yep. you'll see more in-state people. When you get a weekend either before or after that, it's packed. And with Tennessee closing their season down, not closing, opening it up later, more people are going to come to Kentucky. And I have said this for a very long time. Kentucky has birds. People here, I don't necessarily know. As an out-of-stater originally, you know, you were from Ohio too. People don't hunt turkeys the way they hunt deer here. If you go to Ohio, people hunt turkeys the way they hunt deer. And what I mean when I say that is that there is a vast number of individuals who will go out and hunt turkeys like you would see out on opening day of deer season. You know, a lot of the, well, I mean, when we went and hunted the one WMA 2 years ago, we didn't run into we ran into one Kentucky person there. Everyone else was from New York, Virginia, or Ohio. Pennsylvania was another one. Yep. And you know, more power to you if you're going to come over. The biggest thing that I can only say is that, like, just respect other people when you're on public property. You don't want, and this is a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down because it is a complete divergence from it, but you don't want what happened out in like Kansas where people are pissing and moaning and starting shit fights with each other over spots, and you get trail cams banned because of it, because people say, this is my spot, my camera's here, this is my spot, my blind's here. It's like, I hate to break it to people, and like, I get it. I personally would give common courtesy. If I saw a blind there, I would move on. Like if someone put a blind up 2 days before, I'm not going to go sit there. I'm going to go move on to somewhere else. I just am. You always have a plan B. We have a whole podcast about it if you'd like to go look it up. You know, don't be a dumbass. Like respect your fellow hunters. And it's not tough. It's really not tough. And pressured birds are huntable birds. But you damn well better know how to hunt those birds.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's great, specifically, Josh, for you, that you thought it through almost. And again, like, you took the information from the Southern Outdoorsman, from Andrew and Jacob, when you guys talk with them, and you put that into practice. Like I said, tactics are great. When you put them into play and then you have something dead on the ground, that makes it even better. So, I was super jacked for you when you had that, when you killed that bird. And there was a little piece of me that was like, I love Chris to death, but the fact that you had the bird in your backpack and he was filming you walking out, I was like, man, that's cool. That's really cool. So
it was definitely a cool moment. It would have been cooler if we would both had it, but
yep.
I'm still green behind the ears when it comes to turkey hunting. I'm just fortunate enough to have you guys around me to help. I don't have that many bad habits, so.
Well, and that's a good thing to not have. Yeah. So I'm going to ask this question now. I get to ask this question. What is your favorite thing that you learned from this season so far?
This season so far.
I'm gonna take the question and tweak it a little bit.
Okay. I have an answer. I'm not like some of our guests. I usually reflect and think, so I kind of know already what my answer is, just because I tend to reflect and think back on things. Mm-hmm. So far, my takeaway for this season, this includes turkey and deer, because we started scouting for deer in the off season, is the preparation beforehand, before the seasons, is probably pretty crucial to your success. And as far as like efficiency, like how, like the more work you put in beforehand, the more efficient your season's going to be. And that goes for deer or turkey. I haven't got as much late season or postseason deer scouting in as I wanted to. I've gotten some in, but I still need to hit a couple areas, and I'll do that soon, probably right after turkey season.
Yeah,
but we've hit some. I hit something, like I went out with Chris and we scouted, and just learned a lot that I feel like was going to make the season more efficient. Even scouting newer places that aren't necessarily where I plan to hunt this upcoming season.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can take things I learned there from my scouting and apply it to where I plan on going. Just small things. And I think the same applies for the turkey season. Like Chris and I purposely went out and scouted multiple places, try to locate birds and try to figure out what their patterns were before season. So that way, you know, we could be very efficient, even with pressured land on pressure.
Yeah. Public.
And I was tagged out in the first 40 minutes. Well, not tagged out, but I got an opening day bird in the first 40 minutes. I still I have one tag left.
Good deal. That's
my takeaway, is the preseason effort can definitely help with your in-season efficiency.
Absolutely. Unlike football, where preseason doesn't matter, in hunting, preseason very much does matter.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Well, good deal.
During the when I played fantasy football all the time, I used to have buddies that would watch players in college and then look how they would do, and then watch the draft, and then look at all the preseason stuff. I wouldn't pay a lick of attention to any of that until like right before the fantasy draft.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I need to know who's starting and whatnot. And then I came in the top three in multiple years. You got all these people wasting all this time. I'm like, this doesn't matter. For hunting, it matters.
That's the big takeaway. So, if anything else, guys, gals, if you're out there listening right now, get somebody in the outdoors in the coming weeks. I can express to you, as I talk today, I'm getting my son out and getting him involved in a heritage thing that I absolutely love. Was absolutely amazing. Oh, follow up from last week's podcast. If you listened, please, 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 please go online, write your senators, write, go to the public commenting period, on the lease stuff for the BLM. That is big. It's open till June 30th. I believe there's a long commenting period on it, but very important, with lease agreements and who's holding that kind of stuff. We can make a big difference in how public land is shaped in the next decades to come. And it is all based off of conservation organizations that we know, love, and cherish, who are willing to put forth money and effort on building habitat, not building restocking programs. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but if you make habitat instead of making, you know, pheasants or quail or something like that, you're going to have a lot more animals on the landscape than you would otherwise. So anything else, Josh?
No, I think we covered it.
All right. Well, this has been Fueled by the Outdoors. We've been your hosts, Rick Cates and Josh Luck. Everyone, thanks for joining us tonight, and we will talk at you later. Bye.
See you.